Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to Mint. I am Nasreen Sultana. You are listening to All Things Markets, where I speak to experts analyzing the big trends moving the stock markets. The government's fiscal policy since the pandemic began has prioritized growth and fiscal transparency over fiscal consolidation. The Budget 2022 presented by Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman just did that. However, macro risk of executing the budget proposals remain a key concern among investors. The Union Budget 2022 indicated not only is the government likely to miss the FY22 fiscal deficit target, but the target for FY23 is also pegged at a relatively high 6.4% of GDP. The difference is largely on account of a massive capex push and divestment estimates. This underlines the government's resolve to aid a cycle of investment with public capex taking the lead and crowding in private investment. But will Finance Minister's budget proposal fall short of enough fillip to drive a pandemic-induced slump in economy? Will it take stock markets into a tailspin? And does it increase the risk of a sovereign downgrade of India? To discuss those, I am joined by Arvind Chari, CIO, Quantum Advisors. Hi Arvind, welcome to the show.
Hi Nasreen, always good to be on your show.
So Arvind, a lot of macros to work on after the budget speech was over. So what are your key takeaways?
From the budget, the key takeaway was the government has stuck to its priority, right? Which they started last year of prioritizing growth over fiscal deficit and fiscal consolidation. So they've said that the fiscal deficit will remain above 4.5% till FY26, so that's like 5 years out from last year. And they would focus on boosting growth. And they have done that. This budget also was reasonably growth focused. And especially on the capital expenditure side, if you look at the numbers of capex, now you can slice and dice it and analyze it in terms of what is direct, what is grants, and what is through the off-budget allocations. But still an increase from about 4.5 trillion in 2 years back to about 7.5 trillion in FY23. That's a significant increase in capex. The key is whether they will be able to spend, right? You know, we know there are limitations by the center, at the states, and at the public sector level on spending the allocated amount. So if they're indeed able to spend it, then what we call as a multiplier effect on the economy should be reasonably good. So you'll have 3 years of higher capex spent going into the economy. And this we believe should be able to sustain the economic growth in the periods ahead. So in the next 2-3 years, this amount of spending by the government, higher increase in fiscal deficit, should ensure that the GDP growth sustains. And as we spoke last time, we spoke about the fact that India on itself as a macro level is in the cusp of a revival, right? Apart from the government spending, you know, corporate balance sheets have got better, bank balance sheets have got better. Residential real estate is improving. Capital flows have been very, very significant into India, both FDI, FPI, private equity, venture capital, infrastructure. And the exports growth. You know, the global growth has gotten better, and so Indian exports have got better. So all put back together and with the current spending that the government has done, should ensure that, you know, the growth momentum is much better than what it was pre-pandemic and will be able to sustain for a period of time. This also, when that happens, we have seen in historically in the 2003-2007 cycle, you know, when these tailwinds take off, it also means that corporate earnings grow very well. And we have seen fairly strong corporate earnings growth in that earlier cycle. And maybe we saw the first signs of it in the last 2 years where corporate earnings growth has been better than estimates, which generally bodes well for equity. So if I look for a medium term perspective, 2, 3, 4 years ahead, this trend of sustained economic growth, better profitability, better corporate stability, and should lead to a reasonably good period for equities over a period of time. That's like a medium term view.
Right. So what were the risks? Because, you know, a lot of analysts and economists were kind of voicing their concern about the macro risk. Because your borrowings are high and the fiscal deficit target is, of course, were higher than the market was anticipating. So how does it work for the economy? And not to forget that we are still, in the midst of the pandemic and we may have recovered a bit, but we are not out there. So how does the macro work out there?
See, if I look at from a structural macro perspective, Nasreen, one disappointment that has continued for us with this government has been their focus on driving supply side as against demand. Not that they've not done, they've given free food, they have some income support. But if I look at from over a 4 year period, 2 years pre-pandemic and 2 years in the pandemic, if you look at the impact on the Indian individual or the impact on the Indian citizen or the impact on the Indian small business, you know, the informal enterprises, they've had a significant impact, right? Some of them have lost livelihoods, some of them have lost incomes. They are facing higher oil prices, higher food prices. If you put all that together, we still believe that some amount of the government spending that they've announced, you know, if you look at the total spending of the government for FY20, there'll be 40 lakh crore. Some part of that, you know, less than 2-4% also, could have been allocated towards either a direct income support, which they did for, you know, women Jandan account holder, something like that, or a cut in excise for oil so that oil prices come down and disposable income gets better, or a cut in, say, a corporate income tax for MSME for a 2 year period. You know, some amount of either income support or consumption support or expenditure support should have been given in this budget instead of focusing everything on supply side in terms of, you know, either supporting the industry through PLIs or supporting the industry through import duty increases or a large capex. You know, it's good to see capex and, you know, it will trickle down over a period of time. But given the state of the economy, you know, there is a demand problem, right? There is a demand consumption problem.
It's not immediate. It's not putting money directly on the hands of a consumer.
Yeah. That balance was missing. They are focusing on growth, which is great. India, most of India's macro problems will be solved when India grows. When India has double-digit nominal GDP growth, it solves a lot of your problems of income set, taxations and, you know, spending on infra, spending on soft infra. But there, you still need to have that balance of still supporting the vulnerable in terms of people who've got impacted. I mean, now the pandemic was an event and people got impacted because of the pandemic, not because of their own choice, right?
Yes.
I think that balance was missing and that remained a reasonably big disappointment from this government policy.
Right. But, do you agree that the higher fiscal deficit and the higher borrowings could also create some extra inflationary pressure? And, in turn, probably the RBI may kind of switch their stance, faster than expected to turn the interest rate hike cycle?
You'll have to see both separately in the sense that there's a fiscal debt and a fiscal consolidation angle. And then there's an inflation and the RBI angle. So if I look purely at fiscal consolidation, I think they are very clear. They were very conservative in the first period, 2014 to 19. They were very conservative on fiscal. They were trying to cut fiscal expenditure or, you know, trying to put some of the expenditure out of the balance sheet. But since last year, they've been very clear that they will first focus on growth and then consolidate fiscal. So when they do that, the markets have to assume that the fiscal deficit will remain high, and it will remain high for a period, like 4.5% for FY26. That's a fairly long period of reasonably high fiscal deficit, which would mean that the government borrowing will be a lot larger, both center and state, which would mean that interest rates will go up. So last year, the RBI managed that because we were still in the midst of the pandemic. To this year, since economic conditions are better, hopefully we have kind of learned to live with the pandemic and learned to live with COVID, and maybe it is, the worst is kind of behind us in some sense. The assumption should be that, you know, interest rates will increase because this is a significant amount of borrowing, and likely to remain so. And the problem with high borrowing this year particularly will be that there is no new demand source, right? The expectation was that they will also announce some tax changes or some settlement regulations to allow foreigners, to allow the Indian bonds to get into the index and, you know,
it did not happen.
So high fiscal deficits or high borrowing in the scenario of RBI not being that big a supporter in terms of bond buying, in terms of OMOs, and a lack of visibility on the foreign demand. All this put together, you already seen the impact on the bond yields, right? Bond yields since yesterday's low is now up almost 30 basis points in the 10-year space, about 25, 27 basis points. And it can go higher. I mean, there is the background of the entire macro is that there is high inflation globally. Oil prices, which is India's biggest short-term bugbear, is also at levels which are threatening. $90 to $100 will be a problem for India. And in a scenario of a hawkish Fed, and a scenario where the central bank is also going to be hawkish. So as I mentioned in one of my other quotes, that this is a perfect storm for the bond market. And you should expect bond yields to go up. So coming to the RBI aspect, RBI does not need to support growth any longer because the government is doing it. The government has taken the onus of ensuring that growth has revived and the revival continues and sustains through their fiscal deficit. So RBI can now and should shift its focus from supporting growth, which is that accommodative stance and supporting growth, to managing inflation. Because, you know, if we have a period where inflation really goes up, then it will be a bigger problem to manage growth. So I think it's about the right time where the RBI can remove its accommodative stance, lower the liquidity and start hiking rates to normalize. I mean, nobody's saying that they need to go higher because inflation is still below 6% on the CPI basis. But that normalization that you call it. So we expect the RBI should hike the repo rate by about 100 basis points in fiscal year 2023. So which would mean that the longer end of the bond market is getting impacted by the by the fiscal deficit. The shorter end of the bond market also will adjust. But from if you look at from very short term, like a money market instruments or short term fixed deposits, you know, those returns will increase as the RBI increases rates. The rates on those instruments also will go higher, and so relatively your returns in that space is better. The longer run of the bond market will struggle. It will be a tough year, especially if there is no foreign buying. It will be a tough year. You should see yields going up more.
Right. So actually, I have two follow-up questions. Yes. One is, if there are shocks in the bond yields, will it overlap into the equity markets? Because these are related. And secondly, if the interest rate normalization starts kicking off, how will it impact corporate borrowing and of course, its impact on the corporate earnings?
Okay, I'll give you a slightly longer answer first, in the sense that like a longer time frame answer. If I look at a 20-year history of Indian inflation, so CPI has averaged between 5.5% and 6%. The repo rate has averaged between 6% and 6.5%. The 10-year bond yield is averaged between 7% and 7.5%. Despite all that, India has grown at 6.5% real GDP and double-digit nominal GDP. So just to answer from that perspective, India can grow at reasonable levels, despite reasonably high inflation and reasonably high interest rates. So, if you look at from that lens and that time frame, this is okay. This is manageable. you know, we should be able to grow even at slightly higher interest rates or slightly higher inflation. And so that's a kind of a zoomed out answer to your question on whether it will impact. In the short term, it will impact because from my equity perspective, right, some amount of inflation equity markets like, right? And we have seen that last year. As commodity inflation picked up, you saw the stock markets doing well, you saw corporate earnings getting better, and you saw cyclical, you know, cyclical industrial plays doing much better because they are getting that pricing power. So some amount of inflation is good. When it becomes higher is when the problem is. So you might see some valuation related issue where, you know, if say, as you talked about corporate borrowing, right? So if you look at somebody is playing an NBFC and they are all completely wholesale funded and the low cost of borrowing was a big benefit for them in terms of margins and spreads. And as the wholesale cost of borrowing increases, which is what happens when government bond yields go up, you will expect corporate bond yields also to increase in the short, the 3 year, 5 year, 10 year space. And then so immediate margins for an NBFC housing finance lender could get impacted. So from that perspective, it will have an impact. General normal increase, normalization, interest rates coming back to normal should be okay. We can still live with that. The problem will happen if it's excess. Like if I have to take one risk, as I said, oil prices. If say oil goes to $120, which is what some global reports are mentioning, that will be a scenario which will be bad in the short term for bonds, for currency, and for equities. Because that and at that scenario, your entire short-term macro risk from a current account deficit, fiscal deficit, inflation, everything kind of gets impacted. So those kind of scenarios are worse outcomes. As rates go up, you will see some calibration in terms of valuations for equities, you know, in terms of as interest rates go up, they will have to price in slightly lesser margins or a higher cost of interest. Those kind of changes will happen, but I don't think it's really bad. As I said, if I take a long-term horizon, we've lived with high inflation, high interest rates and still done well.
Right. So one last question on the, you know, divestment target.
Okay.
I mean, there was a bit of disappointment on multiple grounds.
Yes.
The divestment target for even FY22 has been revised and we have just two more months anyways. Air India has done deal, but LIC, the big, big ticket sale that is still pending for last 2 years. What do you think? Do you think the divestment target, even the revised one, would be met? And 78,000 crore, that's the target. Do you think LIC comes in the picture even for FY23? Because there is not really any roadmap shared by the FM. Even in the budget documents, we couldn't find anything more on the LIC IPO.
Specifically on LIC, from a fiscal perspective, if I look at just fiscal math, it's very important. And it's a large divestment. The government will be able to get a lot of money when they divest LIC. The finance minister was very clear in her speech that the LIC is happening, but we couldn't see in the documents, right? I mean, that is, we don't know whether the numbers include LIC or don't include LIC.
But to be fair, Arvind, we have been also hearing BPCL is also happening. So that hasn't happened for many years now. So
correct. Yeah, I was coming to that. So it's important that it happens, but the way I see it, if you see the numbers, the way they have reduced on divestments for this year, as well as the estimate for next year, it's actually telling the markets very clearly that the government is now telling the markets that please be realistic. There are limitations to what we can do. This department has not been able to do what it was supposed to do and the targets set out. And we don't expect too much coming out of it. And I think that's the message that I get when I see the numbers. So if they're able to actually divest BPSL, which is going on for the last 3-4 years, or LIC, which we heard for the last 2 years, and several other privatization as well as divestment, I think the message is that don't expect too much because there's been it's not worked the way it was worked. I mean, look at last year's IPOs, right? Record number of IPO issuances by the private sector, and government has not been able to divest in that exuberant stock market scenario. So there's something really wrong. Either that's something that's not working in the divestment department. Last year should have been a very good year for the government to divest, right? if private sector could do it. I mean, you can give reasons for COVID, but everybody had issues with COVID and the dislocations. But the unicorns were made and venture capital money came in and IPOs happened, but the divestments did not. So the message I take it is we should lower our expectations from the Department of Dissemination Public Asset. If they are able to do, now they've done Air India and they did the NINL. If they're able to do some more, then that's a positive surprise. But otherwise, keep your expectations low, is what I will say. Mm.
Okay. See, you know, I said last question, but just one more on the liquidity side. See, we have been talking about, you know, the liquidity probably would be drained out from the system. Because global central banks have started the rate normalization or monetary policy normalization. We saw that in Fed meeting last year. In December meeting, they were very clear that, you know, they would be probably 4-time rate hike in 2022. So probably the FI money, which was kind of driving the stock markets, that would go away. Do you think that the LIC money, which a lot of equity investors were pining on, because that's a lot of liquidity coming in the market, so there would be somewhere at one juncture, markets will have a big issue with lower liquidity flow in the equity side?
See, if you look at the major drivers of liquidity in the equity markets. I mean, when I'm talking about liquidity, I'm saying net buying, right? So it used to be foreigners who were the large drivers of Indian equity. They still are. But today we also have the domestic mutual funds, right? So if I look at five of the last seven or eight years, domestic mutual fund net buying of equities is higher than FPIs, which is a big change, which never used to happen. You know, one odd year, but 5 out of 7 years, not happened. So you have that amount of liquidity or interest or, you know, secular demand through SIPs coming into the equity markets. You also had FPIs, and FPIs, especially if you see last year, 2020, like after the China app impact, like as China went behind their tech companies and, you know, retail companies and cracked down on regulatory, you saw a significant amount of FPI money in the, so if I look at October 20 to September 21, that 1 year period, about $28 billion of FPI money came. So they were very clear that India is the market to be, India has the opportunity. India also was recovering fairly well after the, you know, the initial lockdown and then Delta. So, you know, all those things played out and India got that money. Maybe relative valuations, in the sense that as China fell or as South Africa corrected or Brazil corrected, maybe the relative valuation between India and the other EMs are maybe much better. So that's why you've seen some outflows from foreigners to be able to allocate more to underperforming emerging markets. So that's how you need to see the liquidity. Over a long period of time, we should be net recipients of money from all sources. In the medium term, yes, especially if the, as I said, that short-term macro, if it gets worsens, you know, oil prices or a very, very hawkish Fed, you know, in that scenario, then you might see the liquidity going out, or you might see net outflows from foreign or even lower inflows by Indian retail. So that can have an impact on valuation, but that will be short term. If I look at a medium term perspective, I think given the tailwinds that I spoke about and given the macro setting, if oil prices remain contained, we should be in a scenario where over the next 2-3 years, you will have sustained growth, slightly higher growth, better corporate profitability.
All right. Arvind, a lot of positives in the budget. Of course, there were misses too. But we'll keep an eye on the markets and see how the market reacts to the budget in the next 1 week at least, and see if there are more details in what they had proposed. So thank you so much for joining us, and take care of your health.
Thank you so much, Nasreen. Thanks.
For feedback, you can write to me at nasreen.s@lifemint.com, or you can reach out to me on Twitter at Nasreen Story. You can also reach out to us at HT Smartcast. We are present on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And to listen to more podcasts like this, you need to log on to www.htsmartcast.com.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.